This is a radio program that we wanted to do for quite a while, but we've been involved with many projects, and I just recently finished a video, 2.5 hour video, on The Third Secret of Fatima, The Imposter Sister Lucia, and The End of the World. And we really believe that if this video doesn't convince someone of the Sedevacantist position and many other issues that we've been trying to convince people of, then I don't know really almost what would convince someone. So we're hopefully going to have that available soon. We'll be posting more details in the near future. I wanted to also give some details. Some people have asked for us to put a counter on our website, how many visitors come to your website and so forth, because I have mentioned that we've had millions of people come to our website over the last few years. And someone could put any kind of counter on their website and set it to a certain number. That's not really accurate. But we will be posting, for example, the Google Ads, which is one main outreach plan that we have that we've been using over the last few years to get more people to our website. And we have had over 2.4 million people just from the Google AdWord campaign that we've been doing come to our website. And within probably the next month or two, we will reach over 2.5 million clicks to our website. And we've had over 3 billion impressions on the ads. And the great thing about the Google ads that we've been doing is that when someone mouses over an ad, like you might see an ad, maybe some of you have seen our ads, it might say the Rosary and how the Bible proves the teachings of the Catholic Church, or the Latin Mass and how the Bible proves the teachings of the Catholic Church, or some kind of keyword that people are searching for, and our ads will come up, and we have quite a few of them. And so if they just mouse over the ad or look at it and don't click on the ad, we're not charged. It's only if you click on the ad that we pay a small fee. And in fact, if someone prints out something off their printer many times, the ads will be on pieces of paper. So it's quite a bit of advertising that we get out of that. And someone might say that, well, what about the people if someone doesn't like your stuff and clicks on the ads? Well, Google has built in to their computers a system in which they can pick up whether a person's clicking over and over again on the ad. And so what it does is it computes that, and so it figures out that it's, you know, one person just clicking over and over again, so you don't get the same charge. It's dramatically reduced and changed to virtually nothing. And so they have built-in protections for that. And right now we're probably getting, just from that outreach, probably roughly about 1,000 people, new people per day, to our website. Now, at the height of what we were doing with that campaign, about maybe a year, year and a half ago, we were getting as many as, you know, 15, 20,000 new people per day. And someone might say, well, how much was that costing? Well, at that time, when we were getting that many people, the average person, you know, clicking was 4 cents per person to come to our website. So that's why if people have an abundance of funds and so forth, really those funds are converted into new people being given the opportunity to come to the Knowledge of the Truth and see our website. And so that's why it's so important. We would like to have more people come to our website each day, but frankly, we don't have the funds to do it. If we did, then we would have, you know, maybe many thousands right now, more people coming just from that that advertisement campaign that we're doing with Google. And that's not just the only thing. We've done radio ads that are more expensive. Like, you can get an ad on Coast to Coast AM, for example, for, it's like about $320 per minute. Now, that's over 500 different radio stations across the country. It's the most listened to overnight radio broadcast in the whole world. That's a different way to go. We have done that a few times. And so then there's also the linking campaign that we've been involved with doing, and that's another way to sort of, you know, organically get your website up to the top when people are searching for keywords. And so one thing, someone, we will probably post this, but someone could go to ranking.com. That's ranking.com. And you can type in our website. It lists all the websites of the whole world, and it gives the ranking that they have figured out. And our ranking right now is, there are 156 million websites in the world as of January 2008. And we'll actually put a link to that article that proves that. But our website, according to ranking.com, is ranked 29,807 as of last month. Now, if you can imagine, that's only with, you know, us spending so much, you get about 1,000 people per day just with the Google AdWord campaign. And so you can imagine, if we have a ranking of 29,807, if we had 5, 10, 15, 20,000 people coming per day, we'd be, you know, dramatically higher even. And I mean, it would be just substantially higher. And so this is something why the financial support is so critical, because not only some people might think that, well, oh yeah, you distribute and sell your stuff for nothing, and that's how you're trying to help people. It's just, you know, offering things at a low cost. It's much more than that. I mean, when you think of how many different things we have done to try to reach out and get people the message and get people to our website, there are many different options, there are many different things we've tried, and it can be quite costly. And it does equate to people, it equates to new people finding out about the information, lives being changed. But again, there's only so much money. So if people think that, well, you know, I'm not going to, you know, support this, then less people find out about this critical information. And ultimately, less people will come to the knowledge of the truth. So that's why it is so critical that we receive your financial support, so that we can continue to reach people with the full truth. And the other thing I was going to say was that some other people that are at home or retired have wondered, how can they help get people in contact with our information? Well, for example, a lot of people are familiar with Vonage. Vonage has 30, every day you can call 24 hours a day, unlimited calling plan for like $25 a month. And so therefore you could literally get a phone book of your local city, which are tens of thousands of phone numbers, or if not more in certain huge cities, and you could literally contact probably thousands of people per day and just tell them, here's a critical website I wanted to give you, VaticanCatholic.com. as critical information, and you could, and there are going to be obviously some people that will check that out. And so therefore people wonder, how can I be a missionary in this time, even if I can't send and I'm not blessed with some other gifts or whatever, how can I help the monastery reach more people if I can't support them financially? Well, if you pay $25 a month, and most of you probably do have an unlimited calling plan per month, you can get your phone book out and just go page by page and call. And if you get a message machine, you can just say, check out this critical website. It has critical information for your salvation and much more, information covering a bunch of other topics. And VaticanCatholic.com probably would take you about 10, 20 seconds to leave a message. You could even give our phone number on the answering machine. For those, many people still don't have internet access, you could give them the phone number, the 585 number. And so those are some different options that people could have to find out and how they could get in contact with people. The other thing I was going to say is that we have also moved quite a few copies of our different things. We've mentioned over 1 million copies of the books and DVDs, videos that have been distributed over the last several years and ordered. And the Padre Pio book, for example, we have over 200,000 copies in circulation of that book. And the new book, The Bible Proves the Teachings of the Catholic Church book, that came out around April We did a small run because we wanted to make sure. We didn't think there were hopefully any typos, but we just wanted to check. So we did 15,000 and got rid of that. All of those, of course, they were ordered, and then we 50,000 more were ordered, and so we're almost completely out of the 50,000 now. So we have 100,000 more coming in the near future because we only have several thousand left from the 50,000 run. So that's, you know, since April. And of course, we have other books like the UFO book, which we moved many, many tens of thousands of copies already that have been ordered of that. And so people are waking up and people are finding out, and we can reach people. It doesn't take that much money per person, but again, it's a matter of what people value. So if you value people getting this information, finding out about the website, and if it was a life-changing experience for you or someone you know or has obviously helped you a lot, then you need to really try to help. You have an obligation to try to help in whatever way you can other people to come to the knowledge of the truth of the real, true, traditional Catholic faith. And so if that's by calling people up and letting people, leaving their phone number and the website address and telling people to look at it, or, you know, supporting us financially so we can put those monies into, you know, these different programs to get more people the information, because people are finding out. People, our lives are changing. People are converting. So that's what, you know, people need to do in this time, is support this critical work. And so we just want to mention that at this time. Also, I wanted to mention, as some people know, there was a recent history program on Fatima. When I went down to be taped for it, I may have spoken for about an hour and a half, and in the program they actually combined two parts. I spoke at one time about the Tui Spain apparition of June 13th, 1929, where it says, "The moment has come in which God asked the Holy Father, in union with all the bishops throughout the world, to consecrate Russia, my Immaculate Heart, promising by this means it shall be saved." And so they show that, but then they go to some other picture, and then they combine that with the end of the July 13th, 1917 apparition message, where a lady says at the end, "And a certain period of peace will be given to mankind," when she's talking about Russia will spread its errors throughout the world, fomenting wars, persecution of the church, good will be marred, the Holy Father much to suffer, various nations will be annihilated. In the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph. The Holy Father will consecrate Russia to me, and a certain period of peace will be granted to mankind. So they combined "a certain period of peace will be given to mankind" with the Tui apparition message. Okay, so if people watch this and they know something about Fatima, they may realize and think that I didn't know what I was talking about when I'm quoting this, because they hear the July 13th message combined with the Tui apparition message. Well, that they decided to combine those, and so it may seem like I thought that that was a certain period of peace was coming from Tui Spain. It's not, but you know, because it's their program, they're going to, you know, combine things. They pulled some things together and combined stuff. So if you think that, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about, I have no control over that. That's, you know, their program. They put it together and combined stuff the way that they do. They also combined talking about what's mentioned by people as being the real third secret of Fatima, that it will be a great apostasy seemingly inside the Catholic Church. And they combine that with the definition of apostasy. And so those were two different times that I spoke about this stuff, but they kind of, you know, combine those two things together. So just in case some of you thought that it didn't totally make sense or whatever, I just wanted to let you know that, you know, I spoke for a while, and they combined, you know, different things, and it's their program. I don't have any control of that. So I just wanted to mention that. The other thing I wanted to mention was this Cardinal Siri thesis, and Of course, we have mentioned that the evidence certainly does indicate that Cardinal Siri, we believe he was elected, at least in the 58, if not 1963 conclaves. But there's some people that believe that he continued to be a pope. And one of the things, when I read over all the Lazzaratura Romanos that have been printed in the English language, one of the things I came across is the fact that Cardinal Siri actually gave the homily after the death of John Paul I, which, you know, would make no sense. And what has also been admitted by Siri's proponents that he was to remain pope is that he celebrated the new mass. I mean, so our position is that he was elected in those conclaves because there is a canon that during a lawful conclave, no cardinal is allowed to reveal the secrets, divulge the secrets of what happens in a lawful conclave. Siri thought that even though he was elected and then threatened, or a note was passed to him threatening him, and then he asked for another vote, or if you don't want me, elect someone else, and they voted again, and of course they got John the 23rd, anti-pope John the 23rd, then Paul the 6th in 1963. And so he believed that he was bound till death to not reveal anything that happened during these conclaves, and didn't understand that that's only during a lawful conclave. And obviously it's not only not binding, but he would have to speak up. But he thought that he couldn't speak up, and so therefore these guys are now going out there and they're being accepted as the pope, and therefore I guess I should accept him as the pope and just sort of go with the flow. And I'm absolutely convinced of that, that that's what happened. And to believe otherwise is simply to be a liar, actually. And in fact, in the book that Cardinal Siri wrote, besides giving the homily for John Paul I after he died, and also celebrating the new mass, that's been admitted by the proponents of Cardinal Siri who believe he was pope. Why would someone who believed that he was really the pope ever celebrate a mass that was implemented by someone who they thought was an anti-pope? It makes no sense. But on top of all of that, and the fact that he functioned the Vatican II Church, he even there's a book put out by the SSPX where Siri was praising himself and wanted some credit because he was negotiating meetings and negotiations between Archbishop Lefebvre and John Paul II, and he was involved with that and trying to... I mean, does it make any sense that someone who would believe that he was still a pope would help negotiating meetings between an anti-pope and a bishop? It's just stupid. It's totally illogical. In fact, in this book that Cardinal Siri wrote, Gethsemane, I just want to quote this book. Anyone can get this. Written by Cardinal Giuseppe Siri, page 15. He calls Paul the VI the Holy Father. He says, the Holy Father, Paul the VI, speaking to the faith, said, he's talking about theology, and then he goes on, in the same discourse, the Holy Father says, and then right after that, another paragraph, it is evident that the Holy Father, speaking of theology as the science of revelation, which is the essence of the faith. And then just a few more to just, you know, obviously we could go on and quote other things, but page 17 he calls him the Pope, but the Pope speaking of the interpretation of the Word of God, and then he goes on, the Holy Father, Paul the VI, he's talking about page 49. He says, this is how the Holy Father, Paul the VI, views the rebirth of modernism. And page 58, that one must be maybe on another page. But the point is that, obviously, and other people have quoted things to prove this point, to believe that Cardinal Siri remained the Pope is just utterly illogical. And so we wanted to quote that.
There were a few other things to bring up that are somewhat interesting. We recently were discussing the issue of interracial marriage on the e-exchanges and refuting some of the views that certain people have which oppose interracial marriage, a certain racist. For instance, we quoted the email from that individual from Ireland who doesn't believe that non-whites and non-Jews are true humans, and we refuted that by a number of things. But one point I didn't cover, and in the audio video that I did, was that Pope Paul III, I did mention this bull, Sublimus Dei, where he's condemning the enslavement of the Indians who were discovered in the New World. He also says in that bull that he also declares solemnly that the Indians, quote, are truly men, and that they are not only capable of understanding the Catholic faith, but according to our information, they desire exceedingly to receive it. And so I found that interesting because this heretic from Ireland named James, who was writing in and whose email we posted, he was saying, well, only Jews are true men. And he claims to be a Catholic, which is amazing, I believe. And so this specifically contradicts what he's saying. It says that these natives are truly men, which he, of course, would reject. So I just wanted to add that to the discussions we had of that topic. Another thing that I wanted to mention was that we've obviously been doing a lot with YouTube videos over the last few months, particularly since about June. And overall, actually, they list the total number of video views we've had on YouTube, and it's almost 2 million video views on YouTube. And that actually doesn't even include all the Google videos, because if you'll notice, under our Watch Our Videos page, when you click on it, our main videos, which have been up there for years and which have gotten hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views, probably maybe a few million, I'd have to check, under Google. They go to,
it's millions.
It's probably millions. They go to Google Video. So the YouTube video tally doesn't include any of the views under the Watch Our Videos page, which link to the Google versions.
And see, the reason why we want to do that is because when someone watches a video, we'd like them to watch the whole video. So that's one of the reasons that we did it with Google Video. And Google started to remove how many views were on the videos. So it's something that, you know, we're still going to have. If you look on the Watch Our Videos page, most of the videos, we switched a few of the short ones to YouTube, but most of them are still under Google. So we don't, in a certain sense, get credit in the eyes of people who are viewing, you know, how many total views we're getting. They can't see how many. But that's where most of the people have been viewing the videos. And we've only had the YouTube channel up now for...
Well, we've had it since 2007, but, and we've had some of our main videos in parts up there, and a lot of other portions of our main videos broken up into little segments up there, but it's been since June that we've really started to do a lot more with new different YouTube videos and updates, and so it's added a lot of activity to our YouTube channel. But actually, YouTube is now displaying the total number of video views for all of our videos on YouTube, and it's 1 million currently, 1,727,624 views. And one video that I wanted to mention was the Father John Carapi video exposed that I did, Father John Carapi exposed video, and that was posted on September 17th, so it's been about 11 weeks or so since that was posted, and it received almost 5,000 views. And I just wanted to comment on, and a lot of these people who are commenting on this video are Novus Ordo, and the bad will that's displayed is, it's almost mind-boggling. You see just negative comment after negative comment, people saying, you will have to answer for attacking Father Carapi, and they simply just dismiss all the facts that are being presented. The fact that Carapi believes that Jews don't have to be Catholic for salvation, the fact that he accepts false ecumenism, interreligious prayer activity, which is condemned by the Church, the fact that he wouldn't even refuse a pro-abortion politician communion, the fact that he's saying that people could commit clear mortal sins such as contraception and other things of grave matter but they could be excused for certain reasons, ignorance, etc., which is completely wrong, because if you're doing something with knowledge and the matter itself is grave, you're committing a mortal sin. And so I just found it remarkable, the level of blindness and the level of bad will and the unwillingness to embrace the truth by so many people. I mean, I could read a few of these. It's really stunning. And this is why we're in the situation that we're in, that you don't have almost anyone who's seeking after truth. I mean, you do have some people, and that's why it's encouraging when... It's another reason we post a lot of positive comments from people, to show people, you know, those who are expressing goodwill, those who are expressing interest, and to show people that there are people out there who actually get the point and believe the truth. But the number of people who just are so of bad will, and this is really a prime example of that fact. It's just incredible. Another thing that I wanted to mention is that we recently posted that video on the Inquisition. It's really an interesting topic. And this book that I cited numerous times is quite an important book for destroying popular myths about the Inquisition. And there's some other interesting quotes and points in that book that are worth mentioning, but before I get to that, Benedict the 16th is planning on going to a synagogue in January. Do you know what's the date?
I believe it's January 17th. I think that's about right. It's in the middle of January.
Yeah, we wanted to comment on that a little bit. Benedict the 16th is planning on going to another synagogue. It went in Rome?
Yeah, Rome.
In Rome this January. And so when John Paul II first did it in 1986, I mean, it was a big event. He was really stepping out. I mean, according to all Catholic teaching, it's obviously totally contrary to everything taught by the Church. It's a clear manifestation of acceptance of this false religion. It's an act of apostasy. And so when he did that, he was really stepping out. And now, it's not even a big deal.
This is going to be his third synagogue visit. The third one. I mean, anyone who reads his material from week to week, whenever he encounters a member of a different religion, whenever he encounters pretty much Protestants and so forth, he praises them. He talks about how much he respects them, how much he esteems them. I mean, it's virtually like almost every time. And so how anyone could believe that he thinks that it makes any difference whatsoever what religion a person belongs to is simply out of their mind. It's just a complete and total liar.
And with this synagogue visit, it was quite interesting, especially because we just posted this video on the Inquisition, and there's so many interesting aspects of this book that I cited the Spanish Inquisition, a historical revision by Henry Kamen, who's a Jewish historian, a renowned Jewish historian. And he not only destroys the popular myths about the Inquisition, but he gets into some of the details about, you know, how the Inquisitors looked upon people who might have been manifesting some attachment to Judaism. I mean, we're talking worlds apart here. Obviously, synagogues were abolished in Spain, especially after the Jews were expelled from the country. But people were being brought before the Inquisition and tried if there was some evidence that they maybe observed the Jewish Sabbath, okay? Or if there was some other evidence that they were Judaizing in some way. That was a major portion of the activity the Inquisition was involved with. And I thought that it was just worthy of commenting on, because when you think about that, and then you think about Benedict XVI claiming to be a Catholic pope going into a synagogue. Okay, when they were basically rounding up people for manifesting any attachment to Judaism, what would they have thought of Benedict XVI? They would have said, this guy's Antichrist.
Yeah, and one of the things that's also covered, this is all covered also in this new video. There's quite a bit of information detailing. It's sort of a combination, the new video on Fatima, of all the best parts of the videos on the new Mass and the heresies of John Paul II and Benedict XVI and Paul VI. And
Plus new stuff.
Vatican II, plus the new heresies, plus new information. So it's sort of like the best of the best.
Plus tying it in with Fatima, which is so critical. And so if anyone can watch this video, and that's why we encourage even the people who don't like our stuff, you know, if you have any level of goodwill, you have to watch this video.
And it is, and some people say, well, you're boasting. That's just a fact. I mean, this will be the most devastating blow to the post-Vatican II church by far. There isn't anything like this that's out there. It is going to be the most devastating blow to their counterfeit church. And I don't see how anyone of goodwill will be able to sit through this and really not be convinced if they have any level of goodwill. And so it's broken into 16 different sections, 16 different parts. And a nice thing that will be on this is that you'll be able to click to any section from the menu directly, because, I mean, this is over 2.5 hours, or approximately 2.5 hours, like 2:31, 2:32. It covers all of that. One of the other things, since we're talking about the synagogue, is John Paul II's incredible commemoration for the 100th anniversary of the synagogue in Rome, in which he sends a message to the rabbi of Rome, praising the synagogue and boasting about how this synagogue played an important role in spreading Judaism on this continent, and how the successor of Peter rejoices in this 100th anniversary of the synagogue. And just that's probably one of the most incredible heresies of John Paul II that I've ever seen. So that's included, plus obviously a ton of other stuff.
One thing that I wanted to quote from this book, The Spanish Inquisition, Historical Revision, and it adds a little perspective to how bad Benedict XVI's action of going to the synagogue is. This was from February 12, 1486, during an event which 700 Judaizers, okay, who had been investigated by the Spanish Inquisition, were reconciled to the church. And they basically repented of their Judaizing. And part of the ceremony, where they were basically being forgiven and promising not to do this again, they would all be gathered, okay, this big formal ceremony, and they would say, "Is X here?" The penitent raised his candle and said, "Yes." There in public, they read all the things in which they had Judaized. Okay, the same was done for the women. When this was over, they were publicly allotted penance and ordered to go in procession for 6 Fridays, disciplining their body with scourges of hemp cord, barebacked, unshod, and bareheaded. And then they were to fast for those 6 Fridays. And so you can see how serious it was considered to show any approval of Judaism or any other false religion, Islam, we're talking about Judaism right now. And Benedict XVI, I mean, he's the Judaizer to the max. I mean, this is his third synagogue visit. I mean, the guy is just on record pace. And what's frightening about this is that most people don't even care. I mean, it's now been accepted. And see, once Antipope John Paul II went there and broke the ice, he crashed through the wall, and people became, like, desensitized to the evil. And so once you accept them, that's why some of these false traditionalists who, like, denounce the modernism, there's certain groups we could name who, you know, say it's awful, progressivism, but they're still not saying that they're heretics. Well, they never will. I think that the grace has been pulled. I think they're done. And so, basically, they will accept anything. He could do anything. He could probably proclaim himself a Jew. They'll still say he's a pope and not a formal heretic. And so they're gone. And this is what we're dealing with, the level of spiritual blindness. And I might also want to talk about some of these recent debates that I did. That video that was put up about the false traditionalist who refused to debate us, the guy with the pipe, And I wanted to bring him up again just as an example of spiritual blindness, bad will, and so forth. This is a guy who thinks he's really sophisticated, but when you, and I perhaps didn't expand upon it that much, he's arguing that, acting as if he really knows what he's talking about, that a pope only loses his office if he teaches heresy ex cathedra. Well, I mean, and people buy this stuff. Well, anyone who can think, okay, it only takes like a middle schooler to say, wait a second, a pope can't teach error ex cathedra. And yet he's saying a pope would only lose his office if he teaches heresy from the chair of Peter. And so these are the guys, okay, out there. They won't debate you. They're just utterly of bad will. It's just really, really something. There was something else, some other interesting points in this book, The Spanish Inquisition Historical Revision. It's quite interesting to note that people who falsely accused others of being Jews were brought before the Inquisition. So it was considered a punishable offense, and I want to quote this, page 244 of the book. Ironically, it therefore became an offense punishable by the Inquisition to call someone a Jew. In 1620, for example, Antonio Vergonos, a familiar and priest of Girona, was banished for a year from his village for slandering a neighbor as a Jew. And I just figured I'd mention that quickly, because there are some radical schismatics out there who will call people Jews, you know, if they don't like them or if they don't agree with them. We've been accused of being Jews and so forth. And obviously, if there's some evidence for that, such as in the case with anti-Pope Paul VI, who wore the breastplate of a Jewish high priest and had Jewish lineage, then obviously that would be legitimate. But just because you don't like someone, or you think he's unorthodox, or even if he's just a heretic, doesn't give you the right to call someone a Jew. And so I just figured I'd mention that, because there's this one radical schismatic who emails some people named Mike, who goes around calling anyone he doesn't like a Jew. It's also interesting that in this book, people were brought before the Inquisition, and we actually quoted it on e-exchanges, people who believe that a good Jew or a good Muslim could go to heaven without the Catholic faith, just as a Christian can, and they were brought before the Inquisition. Well, we'd have to round up basically the whole traditional movement, most of the traditional movement, because most of them, unfortunately, adopt that heresy.
And so were you going to continue with the Inquisition or any other?
There's some other stuff, unless you wanted to add something.
Not really.
Okay. On page 220 of this book, it says that the Inquisition of Toledo tried one for saying that everyone should be allowed to practice his own religion, another for maintaining that the Jew and the Muslim could each be saved in his own law. And so that's another example of a condemnation of the heresy there. Oh, another thing that I wanted to mention, switching gears a little bit, is that it was in the news recently that the TSA, I guess that's the Transportation Security Administration, is that what it is?
I believe so, yeah.
Which is in charge of like the airports and so forth. They basically came out, and it was all over the controlled press, that there's been a major breach of airport security, and that the manual that they use for screening passengers to get on flights was
put online,
and all of their tactics for stopping, quote, terrorists, and screening people and keeping dangerous individuals off the planes, it's all been revealed, and so it's just the worst breach, they were calling it, since 9/11. And this, again, I just wanted to quickly mention, smacks of basically laying the pavement for another possible false flag operation, so that, you know, they can get it out in advance now, that if they ever pull something off, and we're referring here to the fact that 9/11 and similar events are clearly conspiracies. The evidence is overwhelming. False flag operations. And so if they put this out there that, you know, our security has been compromised, they know all of our tactics, then if something happens with planes, they can say, this is why.
And they can, at the same time, also say, we need to still keep up all the super regulations and body searches of people at the airports. And, of course, as people have pointed out, yet they allow people, they're just running right across the borders of Canada and Mexico. But you go into an airport and all kinds of searches are done. So this way they can say, well, we still need to have all these checks and everything else.
The police state type of system.
The police state has to still be there, because then people might say, well, what's the point? They still got through, so now they can say, well, it was just this little problem that this got out there.
Yeah, if they didn't make this kind of argument in advance or release this information, then people would say, well, why do we have to go through all these regulations if you can't stop it anyway? So they release the stuff and say, well, we can stop it. It's just this one breach, so accept more security. And so I just wanted to mention that quickly.
Oh, one thing I wanted to go back on, you're mentioning how a lot of these people, or virtually all of these people who claim to be traditional Catholics, and especially traditional Catholic priests, how they would be rounded up based upon that information that you gave of who they were bringing into the Inquisition about saying, you know, a good Jew could be saved, or a Muslim, and so forth, which is what all of them believe. And this was a point that I tried to make also in a second article about how we believe that it's permissible to go to certain validly ordained priests that are offering either traditional mass or Byzantine Rite mass, because when you get right down to it, the worst heresy is believing that people in other religions can be saved. That's the heresy of all heresies. And so that's why a person like a Father Chicada is not much different, is a grade below someone like Benedict XVI, but ultimately they believe in the same major heresy, which is that people can be saved in other religions. Sure, Father Chicada and other priests out there would condemn interreligious prayer services and the promotion of other religions, but the bottom line is that they still both believe that ultimately these people who practice these different false religions or any religion can be saved practicing those false religions, and that's why there isn't as much of a difference as people think between these priests offer the traditional mass and a Byzantine Rite priest, or a priest that may believe that Benedict XVI is a valid pope but maybe has some problems. Because if they believe in that ultimate heresy, the major heresy, the people, non-Catholics, can be saved, that's as bad as it gets. And so therefore there's not that much of a difference between them. So that's something people need to realize. So, and that's why the people who believe that you can't go to these Byzantine Rite priests, or you couldn't go to a priest that believes that Benedict XVI is a pope that offers a traditional Latin mass, a few of them, then they wouldn't be going to mass in the early 1900s or maybe even late 1800s, because unfortunately this kind of stuff, this heresy, this main one, was being promoted and disseminated even many, many decades, 50, 100 years ago. And so therefore, if you can't go possibly to a few of these priests now, and we're saying just to receive communion, maybe confession, we're not saying go to the whole mass or anything like that. I don't think people should do that. I think people should essentially just be going there for communion. But there isn't that much difference between the priests from, say, 50, 100 years ago till now. There's not that great a difference, and there's not much of a difference between them and virtually these so-called traditional priests. In fact, a lot of these so-called traditional priests obviously will be much more aggressive and vociferous about how, you know, if you don't believe that in three baptisms or people in other religions possibly could be saved, you know, don't come here and so forth. Or if you hold that only baptized Catholics can be saved, don't come here. Now, we got a letter from someone said, you know, we're offering a Byzantine Rite Mass for you. Well, they shouldn't, a person shouldn't do that. A person shouldn't have Byzantine Rite masses offered for other people and pay for, you know, masses to be offered. Well, all we're saying is there may be a few of them, priests, that, you know, and you would have to call them up. In the case of Byzantine Rite priests, to call them up, were they ordained the Eastern Rite or Byzantine Rite of ordination? What are their views on ecumenism? Especially ask them about the, quote, Orthodox. Because you want to know if they believe that they think that there's a mission to try to attempt to convert non-Catholics, especially the, quote, Orthodox, to the Catholic faith. And the other question I would ask them, and this is covered in the article that I wrote on this topic, is that what do they think about Benedict XVI going into the synagogue and praising other religions? And if they say, I think it's great, you know, well, then you shouldn't go to them. And if they don't think that we should attempt to convert people. Now, we're not broaching the issue of whether they believe ultimately these non-Catholics can be saved, because all these priests believe, no matter who you meet, that these non-Catholics will be saved, just about all of them, unfortunately. And so, but the question is, do they believe that we should attempt to convert them? Should we, you know, proselytize? Should we try to bring people? And so if they say no, or they say no in regards to the, quote, Orthodox, then you shouldn't go to them. If they say, yes, I believe we should, you know, try to bring people into the church, and if they don't like the ecumenism of going in and praising other religions, then we would say, for maybe confession and communion, you could go there. And I wouldn't even go necessarily for the whole Mass. So the point is that it's a very difficult situation. It's a very fluid situation. It depends upon the priests, of course. There are a bunch of different priests out there with varying views on these topics. And so it's not clear, like, it's not something where you can't have masses offered, though, by these priests. That's for sure. The only thing that you can do with some of them, possibly, is go to confession, communion, and in that limited sense. You're not there for the Mass, so I wanted to make that point, because a lot of people have these kinds of questions. But you should ask those questions to those priests before you even go to them to receive communion or confession. So I wanted to make that point also.
And another thing I want to say is that I didn't really offer many afterthoughts of that long State of Acontis debate that we posted with this guy William Albrecht. And some of our readers, you know, many people obviously listened to it, and, you know, you can't but help notice how arrogant the guy is. He's one of the most arrogant guys you'll ever come across. And I just wanted to comment, again, another example of profound level of spiritual blindness. These guys are so blind to the truth, and the power of the information and the fact that it's rooted in strong argumentation, that they actually think that, you know, our stuff's just ridiculous and that we don't know what we're talking about. And so before the debate, these guys are all really arrogant, and the same way with this guy Goalie, these guys who wind up refusing to debate you. And I just think it speaks to the level of darkness that these people are in and their bad will.
And he was hard to get on the phone.
Oh, yeah, he was really. In fact, we had a video ready to be posted basically denouncing this guy for backing out, because we had like four scheduled times where we were set up and he's claiming phone problems. Now, I find it very difficult to believe. Okay, he basically skipped out on like four or five different times. Okay, and so it was almost like miraculous that the debate even occurred. And so I think that he talked, you know, with a lot of bravado, but, you know, he probably thought that maybe we wouldn't even do it because we were just involved with other things. And so once he saw that we were ready to do it, you know, I guess he got scared or something. He would claim that, you know, he had phone problems and, you know, other problems. And he was so ridiculous. I mean, you can attest to it. He's taking pictures. He went out to the store to try to get a new phone, and he's taking pictures of himself at the store to try to prove to us that his phone's not working. And basically, he could have just, and he admitted that he could have just used a landline. And so he didn't need to get a new phone, because he had a landline, he could have. And he said, well, it takes some time for the landline to heat up. And we're just like, we've never heard of this. And so it was almost miraculous that we even got it done. And I'm glad we did, because it really shows you that he didn't even attempt to respond to any of the heresies that were brought up. The fact that he teaches non-Catholics to receive communion, the fact that he says that you don't have to believe in the papacy, doesn't even address it. He just ignores it. I mean, that, and see, what it really reveals is that these false traditionalists will go through their whole lives, okay, writing articles against Sedevacantism or posting this or that, and they'll never address the key points. Or if they do, they'll do it in a flippant fashion without really, you know, honestly assessing the argument. And these people are so of bad will that a lot of them just, oh yeah, that's a great response. It's only when you get them on the telephone in that kind of format, when you can force them to address the issues, you can see that there's nothing. They have nothing. It's just like that apostate with the pipe. You know, he's arguing as if he knows what he's talking about, that he's as if he's got a good response to the Joint Declaration on justification with the Lutherans, that it wasn't an official formulary. So what? Makes no difference. Well, it was officially pronounced, but the fact that it might not have what you would consider to be magisterial authority, it doesn't make any difference. It proves that he agrees with it, and it's manifestly heretical. And so yet, these people in their blind fog, year after year, will ignore this stuff. Yeah, and they'll go through their whole lives ignoring the key facts. And I just think it's a sad commentary on the level of bad will present, especially among those in the traditional movement. Well, when I say especially, I mean not that, you know, the pagans out there, you know, are of better will, but that people you would expect to show goodwill, people who, you know, might like the Latin Mass or might see some problems with Vatican II or, you know, might be inclined to tradition, you'd expect that they would at least, you know, have more interest in the truth. And there are some, but there's so many that are just sadly of Satan.
And next, some people have heard about next Good Friday, 2010, Bank 16 plans to, quote, beatify John Paul II, which is amazing. He's going to do it on Good Friday next year. So this, and this is covered also in the video, is a possibility. I mean, it could possibly be something that might be mentioned in the apocalypse about how one of the seven heads of the beast received a deadly wound, and the deadly wound was healed, and the whole world worshipped the beast. And then it talks about another beast coming up, and who exercised all the power that the former beast had in the sight of the first beast, and made fire come down the sight of men, and made an image of the first beast, who received the deadly wound and caused all to worship the image, the first beast. And so, is this something when he, quote, beatifies, and of course after that happens, he's going to, quote, canonize him shortly after that point in time. And so is this the fulfillment of that prophecy, considering that Joseph Ratzinger in 1984 was appointed by John Paul II as head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith? And so in a certain sense, he exercised all the power that John Paul II had in the sight of John Paul II, unless that means, of course, that Benedict XVI, Ratzinger succeeded John Paul II as anti-pope, and so he exercised all the power of being an anti-pope in the sight of John Paul II. But the fact that John Paul II, of course, many have heard about, that a picture was taken of a bonfire 2 years to the day of the death of John Paul II, I believe, in Krakow, Poland, right nearby, of a bonfire. And his image came out of, it looks just like John Paul II. And I know a lot of people have heard about it because it was all over the internet. It was all over the world. And so is this that? I don't know. Time will tell, of course, but it's possible. It could be, because it is interesting that they had such a close relationship. He was such an integral part of John Paul II's anti-pontificate and had incredible, enormous power, being the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith and running all kinds of things. And so, in a certain sense, exercising the power. And then, of course, he's going to, quote, beatify, and I'm sure, quote, canonize John Paul II, who received a deadly wound. And this image of him on fire at the same time a couple years ago. So is this the fulfillment of that? time will tell. We don't know. Is it just a sign, sort of like the taking away of the mass, that we'll see at the very end, but it doesn't mean maybe that the end is going to happen imminently right after? That could be. Or it could be that once he, quote, canonizes him, that basically that might be one of the final signs of the end. I mean, we'll see, but there could be very well a possibility of that being the fulfillment of that prophecy.
Another thing I wanted to mention again is that, you know, you see examples almost weekly of prominent so-called Catholic figures who are either pro-abortion or in favor of some other monstrosity, and they're not disciplined by the Vatican II sect. They're not excommunicated, and we've covered this a lot. But they don't even in other areas of immorality, people who are prominently involved in producing, you know, evil shows or evil movies who are, quote, Catholic, they don't excommunicate any of them. And when you really think about that, and then when you think about the fact that John Paul II, quote, excommunicated Archbishop Lefebvre in 1988, about 48 hours or 72 hours after, you know, he consecrated bishops. Not that we're a fan of Lefebvre, but it just shows you that because he was doing something to promote the Latin Mass, which the Vatican II sect considered to be a threat to its Mass centers, they excommunicate him immediately. But meanwhile, you've got prominent so-called Catholics everywhere committing heinous acts of apostasy.
And one other thing is that as they condemned him, after on the June 30th, 1988, consecrates the four bishops, then 72 hours he's excommunicated by John Paul II. But also you read, of course, weekly or biweekly, every few weeks, some, quote, Orthodox guy is being installed, and Benedict XVI sending a message of congratulations saying, you guide the church, you have the weight of the church on your shoulders, the Holy Spirit is guiding you. Or if they're consecrating bishops or ordaining priests, I mean, just loads of praise are heaped upon these schismatics. And so it shows you, as he was saying, how evil these guys are, that they praise these people. And of course, who else was condemned by the Vatican, if not Richard Williamson? Because, of course, he makes a statement where he doesn't believe that six million Jews died in the Holocaust. Immediate reaction. And what's most incredible, and this was pointed out, we pointed this out 6 months ago or so, that he wouldn't even be accepted by Benedict XVI into his, quote, Catholic Church.
And we had the headline, the picture in the L'Osservatore Romano, with a huge headline that basically said that, you know, no communion, no recognition, no acceptance of Williamson if he doesn't change his position on the, quote, Holocaust. And so, basically, this is a binding teaching. And then someone forwarded us this thing about this, this individual who apparently posed in an extremely immodest fashion with a crucifix, this woman who claims to be Catholic. Her name is Joanna Krupp, and this was covered in the, quote, Catholic press and in different websites, and she's justifying her outrageous immorality, and basically, apparently she goes nude in other places, and she justifies it by quoting anti-Pope John Paul II, and she says that he said that basically something like the nude body is a work of art, and therefore she's applied that, she thinks, in her life, and, you know, doesn't have a problem with going nude.
In fact, just a side note on that, John Paul II, the Sistine Chapel was covered, like many of the nude bodies were covered. They covered the nudity on it, and he had it removed, all the stuff, so that they were, again, you know, nude bodies showing in the Sistine Chapel. That was admitted even in pro-John Paul II, pro-John Paul II book.
And what's interesting is that she's another prime example, this woman who claims to be Catholic, amazingly, apparently. And she should be excommunicated immediately, not just the pro-abortion politicians, but people like her and other people who are prominent, and or even not prominent, but for the sake of argument, if we focus on the prominent individuals who are engaged in these notorious forms of immorality, you know, they don't discipline anyone. They don't do anything. And what's ironic is they had some article, I think it was the Catholic News Service or something, where they had some Nova Sorta priest trying to argue with this woman about, well, John Paul II, you're taking him out of context. And it's beyond absurd that you have a Nova Sorta apostate priest saying that this woman who's arguing for nudity is, you know, really misunderstanding John Paul II. Meanwhile, they don't do anything to excommunicate her, to stop her from calling herself Catholic, and she's just the latest example. Then you have the so-called Catholic senators who are, you know, voting against efforts to, you know, limit abortion, and it's just...
And also the so-called Catholic colleges, of course, like Notre Dame, absolutely nothing said about that. Having a person that's as strongly in favor of abortion as almost you could be, being promoted and receiving an honorary, what do you get, a degree, or what did they give him?
Obama. I think it was an honorary doctorate or something.
It's just a joke. And, of course, nothing, absolutely nothing is said by Bank 16. But as soon as some guy who's hardly even known among the world's eyes says something about the quote, Holocaust, immediate reaction. You could see Bank 16 when he went to Israel. He goes, there can be no limit as far as, no one can ever limit the amount of number to ever deny the quote Holocaust. Over and over again, the Lazar Termano, big headline, as he's meeting with rabbis, there can never be a denial of this. This is the one thing that cannot be denied. You can deny Jesus Christ, according to him. You can deny the whole Catholic faith. You can deny any dogma. You can believe in anything. But if you promote traditional Catholicism, or if you deny the quote Holocaust, you will be excommunicated. You will not be accepted in his quote church.
And I just wanted to cover a few of these other stats, some of our videos on YouTube. And as we said, the Watch Our Videos page goes to the Google videos, so this is just like completely separate from all the views that have been generated by the Google video. But Creation Miracles, Past and Present, the final edition, just the final edition, part one, has 17,555 views. The part one of our video on the new Mass has 31,146 views.
And maybe next time on the next program we'll get the actual Google video views. I mean, and this is much more difficult because with the YouTube views you might get a parse only about 10 minutes. But we're talking about a whole video view, and we're talking about, like, with Creation Miracles, like, I don't know how many, 70,000 or something like that. We'll get the totals on that, and Death and Journey to Hell might be like 60,000 or whatever. And some of those exorcisms, like a million views, quite a few.
That series that we put up on Martin Luther just a few months ago, each part has almost 2,000 views. The true story behind the exorcism of Annalise Michel, little audio that was done, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but was put on YouTube on July 5th.
Of this year.
It has 15,494 views, part one, already. So there's a lot of interest in that. And what's interesting is when you see these things that are broken up into parts, though, you can see how not that many people have a very long attention span. Their attention span is short, and so part one always has a lot more than part two, basically on any topic you look at. The video Against Impurity, the series that we put up, for instance, the one on Solomon has, you know, 2,293 views, and that's only been a few months. And there have been a lot of other. The Carapi, as I mentioned, has almost 5,000 views.
So one other thing I wanted to say is that most of the people also that are coming to these Google AdWord campaign, virtually every single click is going to the Bible Proves page, the book that promotes this new book on how the Bible proves the teachings of the Catholic Church. So a lot of people say, well, you know, they like that or are interested, and maybe they leave because, of course, they're just... Unfortunately, they're not that interested and alive in the sense of being aware of things that they should be aware of, and so they sort of either look at that page and they're interested, and of course they can see the buttons at the top and the other topics, they can click around. From my standpoint, I mean, if they're not interested in a book, which they can get a copy of for $5 that includes the shipping, or they can get multiple copies for even less, then you're dealing with a person probably of bad will anyway. But the point is that these clicks and giving these people the opportunity to come to the Knowledge of the Truth, to get to the website, gives them the opportunity to realize what they need to realize to save their souls and the information they need to get. And so therefore, certainly on the Day of Judgment, you can say, hey, you know, I tried to get the information out to people. And in fact, we have people that right now, like especially, and that would be the book that I would recommend to people to distribute, because frankly, most people in this country claim to be Christian. And so if they're not interested in a book on how the Bible proves the teachings of the Catholic Church, probably nothing will interest them. And so that would probably be the thing that we would recommend to people to distribute and to give to other people. And someone might say, well, it doesn't have all the information on the apostasy and everything else. Well, that's true, but it does have an order form in the back where they can get the other videos. Of course, it has the contact information on the final page, the website, and all the contact information. And so if they have some goodwill, they should find that book interesting and then call for the other information, go to the website, order it through the mail. And that's what people are doing. And so, and you know, you can get thousands of copies of these books. There are ways to distribute it. In fact, we have a friend, Bob Bohr from Michigan, for example. He's given out tons of these books just over the last few months, and he's, you know, going to, you know, all kinds of different high traffic areas where people, and he's given it to people, and that can change a person's life, obviously. And that's how you can be a missionary. You know, high traffic areas like in the city where people are on like a maybe public sidewalk where it's permissible to give it out. You know, all kinds, thousands and thousands or tens of thousands of people pass by, and you can say, do you want a free book? It contains critical information, how the Bible proves the teachings of the Catholic Church. And a lot of people would take that. And he's given away, he's just ordered, you know, lots of boxes. And there are other people that are ordering lots of boxes too. So that's something that you can reach people. And if it's cold now where you can't do it, like I said, you have the Vonage and these other plans, unlimited calls, 24 hours a day. I mean, how hard is it for someone to sit down and just take out a phone book and call people? I mean, because, and I've told a lot of people, just when I'm talking to different people over the phone, I give them the website, and they say they will check it out. And so, therefore, you can quickly reach thousands upon thousands of people. So people need to start being a missionary in your own way. I mean, you have these false prophets, Jehovah's Witnesses, that go out door to door and they try to give people heretical information. And the devil has them moving and putting out effort to promote their false message. And people who have the truth need to go out and promote the truth and help people save their souls. It's not good enough if you just know. You need to try to help other people get the information. And certainly, if you have the financial wherewithal, as I've said before, if you're struggling, don't send us anything right now. If you can get way ahead or whatever, and then we can put this money to work to get more and more people this information. If nothing else at the beginning, get them to order the Bible Proves the Teachings of the Catholic Church book. So that's there are a lot of ways to do this, and parking lots where it's permissible to give out these books to people, and you'll see that a lot of people are like, thanks, I really appreciate that copy of that book. And this way, you know, tens and hundreds of thousands of copies can be quickly distributed, because this book easily we could get out, you know, if it can, we have people out there that are
How many
acting.
Is it so far?
Well, we did the 15, then we did 50,000 more, and we have, I think, maybe about...
Total, 70,000?
It's right now we're getting close to about 65,000. So we're like around 60,000, around somewhere in there, that range, close to that. And so we've got 100,000 more we just ordered. And so we're moving along there with that, and with that book. And so therefore, that's why that book, especially now that we have that book, that is the book to give to someone. In fact, in a certain sense, you can't give everyone everything. A lot of the other DVDs, like the ones on John Paul II, you know, are kind of extra material. The book on UFOs and even, you know, Padre Pio or something like that, that's kind of like extra information. The primary things would be the Bible Proves the Teachings of the Catholic Church book, maybe the Creation and Miracles, Death and Journey to Hell, that 2-in-1, or the 4-in-1, the Creation and Miracles, Death and Journey to Hell, the Amazing Heresies of Benedict XVI, and Why the New Mass, New Rite of Ordination are Invalid. With this new video on Fatima, that kind of, in a certain sense, it doesn't eliminate the New Mass and Benedict XVI DVDs, but it's the best one on the apostasy. And we put on the same DVD the Vatican II Council of Apostasy video. The only reason we did that is because it, you can get about 4 hours on a DVD, and so the Fatima one's 2.5 hours, the Vatican II one's 1.5 hours. So we decided to throw that one on there, but it's not the main issue. But you know, there are ways to get this information out. People need to start trying to reach other people, talking to people that their work, calling people up, you know, being missionaries, because if you don't try to help people save their souls and give them the information that you have, the true information, then how could you ever believe that you'll save your soul?
And some of the other titles, like the first part of The Amazing Heresies of Benedict XVI on YouTube has 27,000 views. The first part of the video we did on John Paul II preaching the gospel of the Antichrist, it's 38,000 views. And again, these don't include the Google video views.
Yeah, the Google ones are much more.
Much higher, yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot harder because you're talking about a whole video that's an hour and a half long. With these YouTubes, they're like 10 minutes. And so that's why it's difficult to get like a full view maybe of those Google videos.
One other thing I wanted to mention is that I thought it was somewhat interesting that it was in 1492, since we've been talking about the Inquisition and what happened in Spain, that Ferdinand and Isabella expelled the Jews, and they expelled all the Muslims too. Far away from that time, but they expelled all the Jews in 1492, and that was in January of 1492, and it was in November of 1492, November 12th actually, that Christopher Columbus discovered the New World. And I just thought it was interesting that basically because they decided to make a strong move for the religious purity of the nation and make it a Catholic nation to, you know, bring a real unity under Christ to the nation, that God probably rewarded their country with the most, you know, incredible physical land discovery of all time. And that would go to Spain and their explorer, which would in turn bring great prestige and many other things to the country. And so, I don't know, I think that those two might not be disconnected. I think there might be a connection there between the fact that they were really trying to make the country Catholic, as Catholic as possible. And God rewarded them with, you know, a lot of things as a result. So I just thought that was slightly interesting.
One other thing is just switching back to trying to get more people this critical information. If someone especially likes the Bible Proves the Teachings of the Catholic Church book, I have found some different places. There are mailing companies that have done surveys and have acquired information on people who read the Bible. For example, there's a place in Nebraska, a company, that has mailing lists, and they break it down, and they have like 4 million people on their list that have, you know, filled out surveys saying they read the Bible, and so therefore, like, you can send, you know, test it out, sending it, you know, thousands of copies or tens of thousands of copies to people of this book. That's another option to try that. So if someone feels strongly like, hey, you know, could you send out a free copy of the book? Right now, we feel the best idea is to, when enough people get this book, people are going to order 25, 50 copies or more, and give it to other people, and just let people distribute it to other people. That might very well be the best way, but there is another possibility where we could mail it directly out. If someone wants to say, hey, you know, well, if I gave you a donation, a tax-deductible donation, could you send it use the money in a certain way? If you want to discuss that and we could talk about those possibilities of how we can try to use that, if you really have a preference for trying to get this information out, we can definitely do that. So that's all we have for today, and until next time, goodbye.